Now, having said that to you, one thing becomes very clear. Whenever I look at the appetites, there are two ways of looking at it. Either it's working correctly or incorrectly. And if it's correct, John calls it ordered. And if it's incorrect, he calls it disordered. And that is one of the main pausing points in our experience of ourselves. Because for the most part, when we set our eyes towards God and we strive to love and we take God as somehow our possibility, we recognize in ourselves that we have so many appetites which are disordered. We generally don't experience our ordered appetites, unless we want to sit there and try to work out how good I am. And you can say, yeah, I'm very good because I'm basically, that's quite ordered. But really, how do we experience ourselves? When I get hurt, when I'm impatient, when I get angry, when I'm despondent, when I'm disappointed, when I do something wrong, when there's some shame or something like that, or when I see how my person impacts upon people this way, or how I see how the way I'm living, I'm not going forward, I seem to be going backwards, what do I identify behind that? John would say generally a disordered appetite. Okay. Now, why is that? Because behind all of this, John has an overreaching thought, a truth. God created me with everything that I am, with every appetite that I've got, with every power that I've got, and everything that He's created in me is for my glory, because God only means good for all of us. Only means good, nothing else. And so when I do things wrong, when things aren't right, that means that in terms of the purpose of what I am as a human being, something is going wrong, something has to be done. Okay, do you have a sense of what I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm talking about? Jealousy, telling lies, or whatever it is. Whatever it is. Different things. And that's where he begins now to identify for us in this understanding of what a human person is, where things have to be addressed, how things go wrong. And we'll need to look and see how these disordered appetites impinge upon the person. These aren't simply fleeting things. I'll pause to see if you've got any questions, because I'm seeing confused faces around me.
Well, it seems to me appetite and desire are very much the same thing.
They are linked. But if I think only in terms of my desire without thinking of the appetite, I won't have a sense of where it's meant to go. It is the appetite which is meant to be ordered. The desire is what I'm experiencing now. Okay? Okay. I'm sitting here at the moment and I'm thinking to myself, truth is the most important thing, and Anne-Marie's told a lie and that's bad and I'm going to murder her. That's my desire at the moment. Okay? But what's the appetite behind? How do I rectify these things? I need to understand the appetite. The appetite really is a desire for truth and justice. I'm kind of reacting to something and it plays out in a desire. I'm going to go murder her because she's against truth and justice, which is not true. She's one of the most truthful people I know. But so I'm going to murder her. But what am I experiencing? I'm experiencing a desire because there's an object there, but I need to get behind the desire. Why am I desiring this? Because there's an appetite. Because the way that the appetite plays itself out in my life will vary from person to person. Some people, we all want justice and truth. Some people will see lack of justice and truth and they will go into a depression. And they will have desires which are formulated through that. Others will say, I want to go out and have a revolution. And that's their desire. But what's behind it? The desire it relates to a certain object. But what's motivating behind it is a power and an appetite. Okay, I'm glad you asked that question because the problem with this, trying to formulate all of this in such a short period, the poor formulator, invariably I'm going to leave most of it out anyway. I can't help it. And I'm not an expert on this anyway.
Is there temptation in there somewhere?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, temptation really we can say is a desire for something which is wrong. Just to put it another way. You don't have to bring the devil or anything in. What is in your experience? You don't experience the devil. What are you experiencing? A desire for something which is wrong. But behind the desire for something wrong is an appetite for something good. Always. Always. If there wasn't an appetite for something good, you couldn't desire something wrong. Like, I want truth and justice. And she's against it, so I'm going to kill her. Why am I doing it? Because I've got an appetite for truth and justice. Just that something's gone terribly wrong. That's disordered. Okay? It's not ordered. Ordered means it's like if you go to my office at St. Ives, it's disordered. And you say, well, it's got an order, I know what it is, but everyone has said, there's no order here. That's what we mean by disordered. It's out of order for someone looking at it. The appetite is in fact, I suppose, this is what we speak of. Behind the appetite is a capacity or a power. The appetite, I suppose, is one level at which I experience that power. If I had the power there, but I didn't experience it, well, you know, everything would be involuntary in that sense, at the very minimum. But I have the capacity. And I can choose. I have the capacity to learn. Therefore, how does that capacity express itself in my life? I want to learn. How is it a desire that I want to learn this? But we have a desire for knowledge, don't we? We want to learn. But you all went to university and studied something different. You all chose something different. We all have the power for turning food into what we are. We have an appetite for food, but we would desire different foods. And also, that appetite for food can express itself through different desires as well, in different ways. It can be so distorted that my desire for food is I don't want food. But where does that come from? There is the power to convert food into what I am. Therefore, I have the appetite for food, but it can be distorted. And I can have... There are some appetites that I can have. For example, the appetite for knowledge and truth. And how do I channel that appetite? Desire to murder Anne-Marie. Sorry, Anne-Marie, I shouldn't use you as a... But look at her, she's so nice, no one could ever want to murder her. If I'd mentioned anyone else, you'd probably say, yes, I want to murder that person too. But that's why I've said Anne-Marie, because you look at her and you say, no, if there's anyone in this room that I wouldn't want to murder, it's her. Okay. Scott. First book of the Ascent of Mount Carmel. This is the stuff which is behind it. So what John fundamentally says is, you've got all these different capacities And you know you've got those capacities because you've got appetites. And because you know you've got those capacities and those appetites, and you exercise them within freedom, you can get it right or wrong. You can use or misuse them. Or more to the point, the way those appetites exist within you will determine the kind of person that you are. And that's the point where it becomes very significant for him. They will determine the kind of person you are. Now, to jump ahead a few chapters, because the rest of the detail we needn't go into, what's the ultimate significance of all of this? We go back to where we began this morning. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind and strength. What does that mean for John of the Cross? All of my appetites, I said, need to somehow be directed and formed by God, because that's their purpose. Why do I eat? John would say, yeah, you have to live, but why do you live? For God. I want to know and understand things, but why do you want to know and understand? What's the point of it? To know and love God. Okay? Because of what he says a human being is, all of these appetites and that are not simply for what it is that you want. The purpose of it all is that it opens me, it makes it possible, and brings me to God. So he says, all of these now in the spiritual life must somehow find their way to be about and towards God. And that's not difficult for you to get your mind around. Because when you get married and have children, all of your appetites become more and more directed towards the good of your family, don't they? What happens? Love supersedes. And love, in the end, for John, is the only thing that's going to bring order to the appetites. That's why love for John of the Cross, more than anything else, is the key thing. Because I love, my appetites and all these things now are given direction, a given focus, a given purpose, are being formed. Because the key to bringing order to the appetites, because we can't, I'm looking at the time, I can't spend any more time talking about disordered appetites. It was stupid, just the name seemed like a nice name for a weekend. But it's what always happens, as people know when they come back. It seemed a nice name to give a weekend on, but when the weekend turns up, I think that's a bit too much to do, wasn't it? But anyway, don't worry. The whole point of it then is towards God, okay? And therefore, we can't talk about the spiritual life without this foundation in John's psychology, John's understanding of the human person through this. Every appetite that I've got will be ordered when somehow it is about and towards God. It doesn't mean that whatever I do is thinking about God, but every appetite, everything that God has made me is there because through what he has made me, this will make me into a better person and bring me towards God. Without nothing left out, indeed nothing left out. And many people would say, but Father, there's one thing that is left out. What's that? Lust. No. You pick up the Song of Songs. You pick up the spiritual canticle of John of the Cross. And you will read in the Bible and in the great writings of John of the Cross things which are quite erotic. Because even those capacities and those appetites are not simply directed towards procreation, but it's part of what it is to be human. And somehow for John of the Cross, everything, every appetite finds its proper expression and place because God enters into the picture. And everything now, all these appetites are now ordered around God and brought towards God. Okay. Let's leave how all of this works and part of it till this evening. This is going to be an awful session this evening, isn't it? Throwing so much to this evening. I want to bring one more thing in. And this is also about the soul. This is getting heavy for you, isn't it? Because when I used to give this to novices, this would take days to do. But don't worry. Notice that when this is happening in you, okay, how do I know that I've got a capacity? Let's use a very general one. How do I know that I've got a capacity for love? Because I experience my appetite, I experience my capacity through my appetite to love and be loved. How do I experience my appetite to love and be loved? Because there is something that I love or someone that I want to have love me. Okay, so that's kind of how it unfolds. But when I talk about a capacity for love or capacity for anything, where the desire is in place, there's another step which happens. And what's that? I do something. There's no point me sitting in my little cell, actually it's a bigger cell than here at St. Ives, thinking to myself, I want to have a piece of toast. And just sitting there all day long kind of salivating for a piece of toast, if I don't go and have a piece of toast. Okay. This whole point kind of ends in some action, which is an action of the will. I will to do something. I choose to do something. But notice also that when I will to do something, what I'm choosing to do is also something which is in my mind, isn't it? That's what happens, isn't it? I'm thinking, I'm sitting there in my room thinking, let's think of something horrible. I want to have a piece of toast with Vegemite, marmalade jam, peanut butter and bananas. I say that because suddenly you see what happened? Kind of, you've never had one before, but your memory puts it together in your mind and you think, oh, yuck, and you kind of repulse. What's happened there? Your will's operated because you've repulsed. Your memory started to work because you know all those things even though you've never had it together and you've got it all put together there in your mind, in your intellect. They're the three parts of the soul that John identifies. Intellect, memory and will. Whenever we go through these things, we have the will works and the mind. And there are three parts for John. They are intellect, memory and will. Now, I just want to touch these quickly because we need to look at how these work this evening, because this evening we'll be looking into more of the psychology and the spirituality here. When I said to you, I'm sitting in my room and I'm salivating over a sandwich made of banana, marmalade, peanut butter and Vegemite. When I added the Vegemite, you all go, look, don't you? Why? What's happening? Everything that I mentioned you drew out of your memory, didn't you? And you put them together into your intellect. And you were putting them together into your intellect because in the last thing when I said Vegemite, you went, ugh! Didn't you? And the last thing you said, no. Your will came in and said, yucko, I'm not going to have that. And you may have even distorted your mouth. In fact, your will made you do something. And that's what John says. This is the way the interior of the soul works. Our interior movement works like that. We can think something now, that was what we were doing. We've got things stored up in our memory, and we can choose to do things. And this is another part of the soul which has to be considered in conjunction with that top part.
Intellect, memory in the present.
No, the memory is always there. The problem is you're not really dipping into it. I'll give you an example. How did you get here yesterday? Unless you're like my mother, you can remember. But until I asked you how you got here yesterday, it wasn't in your intellect, was it? So that the memory of those of you who know Thomas Aquinas, it's a passive intellect in Thomas Aquinas. In John of the Cross, it's there. It's a storehouse. We'll look at memory. I hope we've got a lot to do tonight, because in this area for John of the Cross, the most powerful thing we need to talk about is the memory, because once you know how memory works, you will begin to be able to address your own spiritual, human, moral life, because it's about how the memory works really for John of the Cross. And then it's there, and then another part of you chooses. There's some people who think things all the time but never do anything. Okay, that's the will. Now, the human person is that who has the capacity to love and to know God. We are defined by God. And the way that is played out in our love of God, our love of neighbour and love of ourselves is how these powers and appetites are played out in us, which means in our intellect, memory and will. I'm not a psychologist, but I suppose this is about the tsuke, is it the anima, is it? This is garbage I'm talking, but this is about, and where that's about behaviour, the top part. It's about behaviour. And John links the two together, of course. This is my psychology, I suppose. My tsuke, and that's my behaviour. And my behaviour impacts upon who I am, and who I am impacts upon my behaviour. And that's where we're going tonight, to see how the two work with each other. And if you want to get a hint of where I'm going to begin by looking at how sin impacts upon you personally. John's a very profound thinker. So in thinking about the spiritual life, he doesn't say, really what I need to do is eradicate sin. He says, no, what I need to first of all understand is how sin impacts upon me. Because unless I know the effect of sin upon myself as a human being, I'll never be able to work in the area of sin. That's why you keep on doing the same sins. I'm sure all of you have got your own personal sins and you do them all the time. You can't do anything about it. Because that's about how my powers, appetites and desires impact upon and make me into the person that I am. I need to understand how that happens, how it happens, what's happening, so that I can begin to address it in myself. If you understand all of this, you'll never need to come and see a discussed Carmelite priest ever again. That's what I'm hoping, that you will never come back again. Because then we've done our job, because you won't need us to direct you as to what to do. So that's where we're going. Any thoughts or questions? Sorry, at the back and then here.
The psychology side and the behaviour side, I'm sort of getting together. Like, I see the intellect with the capacity and the power, the appetite and experience with the memory and the desire and will together. And I sort of like
they all work together. We'll look at that tonight. We'll look at that tonight. Because if I do it now, it'll take me an hour to do it. So ponder it yourself within your own experience. And what I would say to you is to think this way. When I do something wrong, think of something, the first time you did something wrong in some area of your life. How has that impacted upon me personally in terms of my memory, of how my intellect is able to work and how my will? Because let me tell you how they're meant to work. I don't know whether to do or not do this. I don't know whether to exercise my will. My intellect is meant to tell me. So we come in and I've got a choice of murdering or not murdering Anne-Marie. Someone says to me, Father, you've got a choice. Here's a knife. You can either stab Anne-Marie or not. What do I do? It's my intellect which should tell me. It should say, Anne-Marie's a lovely human being. It's a sin to kill her. God loves her. Don't kill her. Okay? when my intellect's working correctly, it tells me this, and not only it tells me this, I do what it says when it tells me the right thing.
So the intellect then is like a conscience as well?
That's where conscience works. But it can also tell me the wrong thing. That means something's gone wrong there. Or it can tell me the right thing, but I'm not willing to do it. It can go wrong there. Where does memory fit in? Because memory also is not simply memories of events. Memories carry emotions. That's where emotions come in for John. Because you should be asking when you look at that, there's something missing, Father, someone should have said. My emotions, my preferences. It's memory. What do you prefer? Is it because it's better? Generally not. It's connected to lots of other things, which is where memory comes in. And memory then impacts upon how I think. It will also impact upon my ability to love, because will is, you don't love with the intellect or the memory, you love with the will. Someone comes to me and says, Father, my marriage is in a mess. Do you love her? Yes, I do. But have you ever shown her? No, I keep it a secret. You don't love except by loving. You don't love in the intellect or the memory. You love by loving. So, yeah, Noel, don't come to me one day and say, our marriage is in a mess. I said, do you love her? Yes, I do, but I keep it a secret. You know, that people laugh. It's quite ridiculous, but that's because that does happen, in fact. You love with the will. You love by doing something. But we'll come back to that. We'll see what we get done tonight, because if we don't get it all done tonight, we'll have to transfer tomorrow. To tomorrow, and then you won't have to worry about depression. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes.
Would that be the same as sinning, when you love with your will?
We all love with our will, because the will is that by which I choose to do something.
So when you sin, is it from entire memory or just through the will? When you get to the point of the will,
it's always a sin. Is always an act of the will. You choose. You choose with your will. Okay. You can think something. I can think, will I drop this? What should I drop it or not? Will I drop it? Tell me, should I? I could or I couldn't. And then I have to choose, all right, I will, just to make the demonstration. But if I didn't choose to let go, it wouldn't have fallen down. I had to choose. That's the will.
That's a matter.
Any other thoughts or questions? This morning is very dry, but I have to put these in place so that I can begin to explain how it works. Because when you see how it works, you will suddenly realize why I'm like this, why I sin this way. And when you can see why, you can begin to see what you have to do. Because just to say, go away, Father, confession says, go away and sin no more. That's very easy for you to say, but I don't know how to. And you don't know how to because you don't know why you sin that way.
And do we know we're doing it sometimes?
Well, sometimes it becomes habitual for John of the Cross. When it's habitual, it's even more serious. Because what happens is you start turning off to the fact that you're doing something wrong. That means that the intellect's suddenly gone into hibernation. You do something bad long enough and the intellect gives up. I'm not going to tell you it's wrong anymore. And you can end up doing something wrong as if it's something right. But we'll look at that tonight. That's making tonight become rather exciting. Everybody's going to rush in. No one's going to be late tonight. But those of you who come along many times to the Young Carmelite should be able to give the talk tonight. You should all know it off by heart. That's two of you here from the Sydney Young Carmelites who have been coming along for 10 years or more. I've heard this so many times. You should be able to give the talk.
I just think wrestling with desire, appetite, I know they can be put off that. But am I right to say that desire is the underlying cause for appetite?
No, what is the underlying cause? The underlying cause for... Let's turn to sight, okay? What's the underlying cause? I'm able to see, okay? And what's the next underlying cause? There's something there that I want to see. Okay?
And the way that I experience this is through the desire. There is something there that I want to see. Now, in fact, desires and appetites are basically the same thing, except they're not exactly the same, the way they work, because you can have a desire that's happening, but really the appetite which you need to address is another one altogether. Like, I want to murder Anne Marie, but what's the appetite behind my desire to murder Anne Marie? It could be about truth and justice. It could be about something else, absolutely, completely. But the way that I will or want to act out is different. It could be simply that I've been hurt by something. Nothing to do with truth or justice at all. It's many things. And you need to look at those appetites. One of the fundamental appetites is the desire to be loved. And that can be played out through a multitude of desires. And if I try to address the desires that are happening there without addressing the real appetite, which is the desire to be loved, which is the capacity to be divinized behind that. The desire to love and to be loved is about the capacity to be filled by God. I'm never really going to address it, and what will happen is it'll be transferred from one place to another. Not going to help. And that's in fact psychology. The psychologists speak that way, but John's writing about this 400-500 years earlier. And that's got to do with memory.
Yeah.
The way memory works. And all I'm trying to do for you this weekend is to make you stop and think, hey, there's another way of thinking about this. Because unless we act humanly and say, I'm going to think about this, you're in fact a slave to your own emotions and your own... For John of the Cross, he would say, you know, what's the difference? One of the differences between freedom and lack of freedom is I'm a slave within myself. All of this is happening, and I'm just a slave in it all. But what John does is he tries to show you what's happening so that we can begin to have freedom. So that's the difference between what John writes, between attachment and detachment.
I feel it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, but it does matter what you think.
We've got a question here first, yes.
You mentioned it yesterday as well in terms of capacity, and then you used the word divinized. I don't understand.
What is the capacity? Capacity, we can look at ourselves as a capacity to be filled by different things. If I understand myself through my appetite for food, my capacity is the capacity to be filled by nice foods, which is a nice thing. If I understand my capacity as a capacity to listen to music, it's being filled with lovely music, it's a nice thing. Or it's about knowledge, it's about being filled with, you can think of it that way. Or if it's about truth, it's about being filled with truth. But ultimately, God is truth. God is beauty. God is goodness. And our capacity is an infinite capacity, which is to be filled by God, which is what we speak of as divinization. And it's not simply to be filled with, but if I keep on talking about this, I won't have to give tonight's talk, in fact. John of the Cross, it's for the memory to take on the form of Christ. I'll put that there now, in fact. For John of the Cross, the memory is about hope and about the form of Christ. And the intellect is about faith and ultimately about emptiness. We'll worry about that tonight.
I put that there to make sure that I talk about it. Yes. You only get hurt because of the memory, really. That's why this hurts you and not the other person. It's very different to a knife.
I jab a knife into two people, you'd all be hurt. I say something quite innocently to two different people and one person gets hurt. What's the difference? It's the, for John, it's the forms they're carrying in their memory. And in the end, everything in their memory has to be Jesus Christ. It's only, ultimately, the only way to purify the memory. It's not about forgetting, because you don't forget until you get old enough to have dementia and Alzheimer's. You don't forget. Why try to have as the purpose of your memory something which can't happen? The memory's working well, it remembers.
Is that like St. Benedict saying, dash the memory of wonder world of Christ?
I don't know. I don't know Benedict very well, Ryan. Any time I've ever studied Benedict was studying his teaching on humility, the degrees of humility, so I don't know. It could be. Sounds right. Well, I won't answer that. I need to think about it. I couldn't give you an answer to the last one. But for the second one, with the child and the memory for John of the Cross begins as something empty. And as things happen, the forms, because he has a medieval way of looking at things. When I learn something, what happens? It's almost as if something goes into my mind. But it goes in not material. You know what a book is. But a book never enters into you physically. Okay? You know what Vegemite is, otherwise you wouldn't have gone, yuck, and that thing. But it's not physically in your head. It's not physically there. So the memory is a capacity which receives immaterially, and now we're going into Greek philosophy, the form of the thing. Now, I don't know what that form means. No one really understands it, but it's, suffice it to say, it's not simply that you imagine something, there is an understanding of the thing. So there is something of the thing which you know, really of the thing, not simply an image, but there is an understanding, there's a meaning, there's a concept, however you want to put it, which is part of the thing, but not its materiality. And that goes into your mind. That's how you understand something. But what you're understanding is not always being thought at this moment. And what goes into your mind is not being thought at this moment goes to the memory for John of the Cross. It's not original to John of the Cross. That's part of the way of thinking, which was still there in this time of the 16th century. But it's and now kind of people would only argue about the mechanics of it. What John is saying is pretty obvious. We can argue and talk about how it happens, the mechanics, that's neurology and all these other kinds of things, and what really is happening, how much of what really is knowable of this thing is in the mind. You can argue about all of that, but there is something knowable about this book, about what a book is, which is in your mind. Otherwise, you'd never be able to identify a book again. Otherwise, you wouldn't know that this is a book, this is a book, and those of you who've got books on your laps is also a book. You wouldn't be able to identify something except that something is there. Now what it is, how it happens, is open to debate. But that there is something there which within you which enables you to identify, I think is not disputable. Because otherwise you would all walk into the walls rather than go through the opening. Because you know what the opening is, even though that opening is different to anyone you've ever seen before. But you know that's the way to go. How do you know that? There's something there. And it's not that you've got all the doors you've ever seen kind of lodge physically in your head, because my God, you'd explode by now. That's what he said. That's why John means it's a form is in the memory. Only a form, not a thing. And I know that what I've said is true, because afterwards I know that I won't see blood splattered all over these walls, because you'll all walk out through the door. In spite of what some smart person will say, the proof of the pudding is you'll all walk through the door. That's who said that? This is my right hand. Gilbert Ryle answered the skeptical debate which was happening at Oxford University at the beginning of the 20th century. But this is my right hand, he said. Don't worry about that. I think it was Gilbert Ryle that said that. Any other thoughts or questions? Okay.